You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Civic Media Radio Network. John and Gordy filling in for Maggie Dawn this week. And we've got so much more to get to. Interview with Ben Wickler here on the program. Mm-hmm. And we're taking your calls as well, encouraging you to give us a call.
Yep. 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. And also in about a half hour, we'll be talking to Patrick McBride. He wrote a book called The Luckiest Boy in the World about his time as a bat boy with the Milwaukee Brewers during the 1982 season. That opened the door for him to be a bat boy and then eventually a ball boy for the Milwaukee Bucks. And then he worked for the Packers. And then he became a cardiologist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Quite a story. And he'll be joining us in about a half hour.
Those are all the prerequisites to become a cardiologist, by the way. Did you know that? Yeah. That's on his resume. That's, like, you know, Kamala didn't put McDonald's on, which would have helped, I thought.
Okay. Well. You've got to move on, though. So,
you know, we were looking at CNN here in the studio, and apparently there was a conversation between the prime minister in Canada, the new prime minister, and Trump. And I always try to come up with a different name for Trump so I don't have to say his name. But anyway, they had a conversation. According to Trump, it was very, very good. So we'll see. This is what happened earlier, though. This is a comment from the prime minister. It's cut 273. And this is Prime Minister Mark Carney. Mm-hmm. All right? Doesn't sound like he's joking around. Let's listen.
The administration has, within the span of a few weeks, unleashed the greatest assault on the First Amendment since the Red Scare, while insisting that they are restoring freedom of speech.
That's not it.
The censorship industrial...
Hold up.
That is not it.
Okay.
All right.
We will try to regroup here and...
Canadian
right
Prime Minister is 274. Might have given you the wrong number.
Well.
Yeah, I did. Okay. I gave him 275.
Oh, it's 274? Okay, sure. Let's try that one, Cal. I think he's efforting to get it.
Here we go.
Okay, now we got it.
The old relationship we had with the United States, based on deepening integration of our economies and tight security and military cooperation, is over. What exactly the United States does next is unclear. But what is clear, is that we, as Canadians, have agency. We have power. We are masters in our own home. Nous sommes chez nous. We can control our destiny. We can give ourselves much more than any foreign government, including the United States, can ever take away. We can deal with this crisis best by building our strength right here at home. It will take hard work. It will take steady and focused determination from governments, from businesses, from labor, from Canadians. We will need to dramatically reduce our reliance on the United States. We will need to pivot our trade relationships elsewhere. And we will need to do things previously thought impossible at speeds we haven't seen in generations.
Yep, there it is. So they did talk this morning on the phone, and we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah.
We have just a little time here. We're going to play part of our interview with Ben Wickler. And this was previously done maybe last week sometime. Mm-hmm. We asked some very important questions. Let's go to Ben Wickler and our interview with him.
This is go time.
Yeah, well,
coming down to the wire here.
It really is, and you know, the big Supreme Court race and everything. And you were on MSNBC just recently in regards to that. One of the hosts surprised me with the question, almost downplaying the fact that there was this debate about how important billionaires are to the campaign. And I thought that was probably one of the more important situations that we have to kind of focus on. And they acted like, are you spending too much time talking about the billionaire influence in this Supreme Court race? I was really shocked. I'm glad you answered it correctly and said it was very important that we focus on that.
Yeah, the idea that you should, you know, the richest person in the world can march in and buy a Supreme Court seat on the state's highest court, it's outrageous. It's preposterous. Yeah. And, you know, we need to overturn Citizens United and get money out of politics in general. But we've never seen in American history someone spend $13.2 million to buy a judicial election. That's what Elon Musk has done so far. And that number could go up. And this is while he's destroying Social Security and Medicaid and cutting cancer research and, you know, like one thing after another, the Veterans Administration. He doesn't want any accountability. And that is not how our system is supposed to work in the United States of America.
That's right. So to point out exactly what Musk is doing and the fact that he wants to continue that through the Supreme Court race here in Wisconsin is probably one of the most important issues of our time.
And the thing that people should know is that Brad Schimmel thinks this is great. We have a recording of him saying that he had to buy a pair of knee pads at Menards so he could crawl around on his knees and say, please, 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 and beg giant donors for money. Wow. I mean, What are we talking about here? How is that how you become the person with the deciding vote on the Wisconsin Supreme Court? Like the idea that somebody who's just ready to roll over for whatever the MAGA extreme right wing oligarchs want from a Supreme Court, no matter what your politics are, the justices should be deciding things based on the law and the Constitution, right, and not based on one side or the other. And I feel a real sense of urgency about making sure Brad Schimmel doesn't get that Supreme Court seat.
And I think, he's going to be doing what the billionaire wants him to do at this point. Everybody knows that.
That's exactly right. And he's saying on the stump that he's going to be a support network for Trump. Trump keeps losing in courts and he needs a support network. The only way we stop this is in the courts. And Elon Musk is, paying people to go door to door with flyers saying Brad Schimmel will advance Trump's agenda. And it's not like it's right out in the open. There's lots of people supporting both sides, but there's only one person who's explicitly running a game saying, put your vote in here and you'll get this outcome for this kind of decision. And I would much rather be in a world where there aren't big donors on either side that are funding these Supreme Court races. That would be great. As soon as Republicans are ready to do some campaign finance reform, just give the Democrats a call because they'll all vote for it. But we're in the world that Republicans built, and they're taking advantage of it by having the world's richest people try to buy and sell judges for their own partisan ends instead of serving the public.
Well, the saddest part is if Schimmel does win, it looks like money is going to control our government from here on in. I mean, this is the billionaire administration. So.
It is, but the people have the final say here. Susan Crawford is unbought, unbossed. She is a judge in the truest sense of the word. And I think the energy is bigger on her side, honestly. Like, when I look around the state, there's so many people who do not like what they're seeing with these. I was just at a town hall and a guy talked about how his nephew had just been fired from the Social Security Administration after 20 years. And the crowd was just furious about it. And that is the guy doing that is the guy trying to put Brad Schimmel into the Supreme Court. Susan Crawford, you'll never hear something like that. And I do think, when you knock on doors and talk to people, people are ready for something different. They were 2 months into this administration. They already don't like the idea that this is how our state is going to be run. And I think there's a real opportunity for Susan Crawford to win that Supreme Court seat and then just, rule based on the law and fairness and democracy instead of ruling based on what the billionaire's billionaire wants the court to do this day or the other.
Of course, you did mention holding town halls. You were at a town hall, and Mark Pocan has appeared at a few town halls in Republican areas. I'm just wondering, how do you feel about maybe the former candidates who lost their elections, but maybe should go out into those town hall meetings again in those districts and start promoting themselves at this point, because it's really, the ideal moment to do this, isn't it?
I think the more town halls, the better. I think the big thing is people need to be heard. People have a deep sense of crisis. The more you read the news, the more you follow what's happening. One day it's universities being massively smashed and the next day they're attacking Medicaid and Medicare and firing the people that process your taxes and investigate tax cheats and billionaires are trying to evade taxes. People want to have a say in this moment. Republicans don't want them to because they don't want word to get out. And I think anyone who has a platform should go out get people together and make sure people can share what's on their mind.
Talking with Ben Wickler here, Wisconsin Democratic chairman. So, Ben, as you get down to this last period here, the last 10 days, what's the primary message you're trying to get out about this campaign between Schimmel and Crawford?
Well, I think there's kind of three big pieces of it. One is on these issues that are so personal to so many families, like whether the state should ban abortion. Brad Schimmel was a enthusiastic supporter of ending Roe versus Wade, of supporting this abortion ban passed in the year 1849 in Wisconsin, of supporting that that law coming into effect. And he's been supported by the people who want to ban abortion and IVF and contraception in his campaign. Susan Crawford, there was a case called Planned Parenthood versus Brad Schimmel. Brad Schimmel said it was an honor to be named in that case, and the lawyer for Planned Parenthood was Susan Crawford in that case. So these kind of questions of whether the government should be involved in your personal life and making decisions for you, that's one piece of this. The second piece is this question around Elon Musk and the attempt by the richest, $250 billionaire guy in the world trying to take over our court system and buy it for one party. That's the second piece. And then the third piece is about character. Schimmel has this record of just, constantly using public office to advance partisan power, advance the agenda of extremists. And there was even a case where he gave a plea deal to someone in a child pornography case because his lawyer gave a campaign, or after his lawyer gave a campaign contribution to Brad Schimmel's re-election campaign. Susan Crawford is the kind of public servant that you just want in the government. She was a prosecutor. She led environmental enforcement to keep our water clean. Has served as a judge in an exemplary way. And so the question just to the character of who it is that you want in this office, I don't want someone who's crawling around on knee pads asking donors for money. I want someone who's reading the law and actually thinking through what it is that our Constitution says you're supposed to do. And that's Susan Crawford in this.
I think it says a lot that, of course, Schimmel is a judge in Waukesha County. And all the Republicans seek out judges in Waukesha County to get their court cases done their way. And that should give you a pretty good idea of what Schimmel is all about.
That's right. What we should have is a system of equal justice under the law, where every person is judged by the same set of laws. And, it doesn't matter if you're the wealthiest right-wing campaign contributor or, someone trying to fight for union recognition or, a nurse who's been cheated on her wages and she's trying to make sure that she's treated fairly. Like, no matter who you are, you should have equal rights in the state of Wisconsin. And
all right.
That's Ben Wickler, Wisconsin Democratic chair.
And it comes down to the money in all of this, and I understand that Governor Pritzker may have donated a lot of money as well.
Yes.
Yeah, he's a billionaire.
Yeah, J.B. Pritzker donated quite a bit for Susan Crawford. So, big money on both sides in this one.
Well, see, Illinois is helping us out.
There you go.
Gotta thank
them. All right, we're going to take a brief time out. When we come back, we will have more, maybe some town hall outrage.
Yes.
All right.
We've got a lot of things.
And a lot more coming up on the Maggie Dawn Show. John and Gordy filling in. We'll be back with more on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Leftovers here.
Yep. It's John Agordi in for Maggie Dawn on the Civic Radio Network, Civic Media Radio Network. And phone lines are back open again, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you want to get to the cut that we had lined up for the town halls?
Yeah. This is just about all these town halls that have been going on. There's been a lot of outrage at many of them. And this really tells it all. It's what people are saying about all of these town halls. Let's take a listen. Cut 217.
I've spent the last year in treatment for breast cancer. Oh. We are now looking at cuts to Medicare, Medicaid, and even the canceling of possible research for breast cancer because it's DEI to do research for women. I am so frightened.
Oh, God love you.
What is Congress going to do for us? What are you going to do for us? And what can we do?
I represent the L of the LGBTQIA community, and we are scared. Our state is stripping rights away from individuals. And please, I'm begging you to tell me how you are going to protect me as your constituent.
That's just a little bit.
Tough stuff, isn't it?
A little snippet.
Yeah.
A little taste. It's still going on, all these town halls.
I've got some input on that. Trump wrote on Truth Social about these town halls.
Mm-hmm.
Paid troublemakers are attending Republican town hall meetings. Didn't sound like a paid individual there.
No, I don't think so.
No, it's all part of the game for the Democrats. But just like our big landslide election, it's not going to work for them. Wasn't a big landslide election at all.
No.
48% of the vote. Speaker Mike Johnson said, we've seen this movie before. They're professional protesters, so why would we give them a forum to do that?
Professional
yes,
protesters.
These are professional now. Yes, we've actually got a school, and it's a course here at the UW.
Yeah,
And Minnesota Governor Tim Walz said, people want to make their voices heard, but their congressmen are hiding in Washington and refusing to do town halls. I'm going to join Democrats across the country to show up where Republicans aren't showing up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's here's the one thing I did want to say earlier when we were talking about I'm mad as hell.
Yeah.
Why aren't the Democrats just screaming at the top of their lungs in the House and the Senate and just not putting up with any of this crap?
Mm-hmm.
I am so done with this.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I turn around, they're closing another office. They're laying off another 600, 1,000, 6,000 people. I can't handle it. This system can't handle this kind of loss.
Right.
And they act like, well, you know, all of these offices and all these workers, they didn't do anything. They were lazy. They weren't really qualified, and they weren't doing their work. That's the kind of job referrals they were getting. So I'm just, you know, if I were an elected official, I would be ranting. They'd be afraid to see me walk in. Seriously.
I'm sure they would. Oh. Here comes that Peterson guy.
Yeah, there he comes again. And I want to break into the House just like David Crockett did. And remember the episode where he goes to Washington? No one's going to know what I'm talking about.
No, that was a good show.
Okay. All right. Well, here's Desi Leidick. She was talking about the Signal chat mess up. All right.
Yeah,
so this is 267. Play this cut. 267. Desi Leidick. Great stuff on The Daily Show.
The mainstream media is obsessed with this scandal over war plans that relate to a journalist that could have harmed U.S. troops. Well, I've been watching Fox News for 57 hours straight, and I'm ready to Fox-plain this insignificant oopsie-daisy that will never happen again. Oh, it's from my good friend Mike Waltz. We are bombing Sudan tomorrow. First of all, I don't even know why this is national news. It's not like a trans high schooler tried to play recreational volleyball.
Did you ever try to start a group text? You're adding people and you accidentally add the wrong person. National Security Advisor Mike Waltz accidentally added a reporter to the group text.
We've all had that embarrassing moment where you add the wrong person to the group text and then you have to uninvite your cousin to the threesome. Just last week, I sent a nude to my husband and I accidentally sent it to The Atlantic's editor-in-chief, Jeffrey Goldberg.
Yeah, look, it's a mistake and we got to move on.
Move on. Hillary Clinton mishandled her emails and you don't hear conservatives still bringing that up. It's like my good friend Mike Waltz texted me the other day. The following password can be used to access Donald Trump's personal email account. Sorry, wrong text.
Nobody was texting war plans.
What is a war plan?
Do you think these are war plans?
Oh, this, it's an outline of what is about to happen.
These weren't war plans. It was an attack outline, a strike suggestion, a roughhouse rough draft, a recipe for a tussle, nuclear noodling. These were just bullet points. Bad example. And by the way, this fake journalist slash cybersecurity expert isn't the only villain in this story.
Could have been a wee bit of a security breach, but it's not like they homebrewed a server and then bleached it or kept classified documents in their garages next to their Corvette.
How about instead of attacking Pete Hegseth for the information he did leak, we talk about the classified info that Joe Biden didn't leak? It's like my good buddy Mike Waltz always texts me. These are the names of CIA agents under deep cover in ISIS terror. You know what? Now that I think about it, the media should be covering this as one of the greatest success stories in modern political history.
It's an insight, a transparent insight into the thought process and dialogue of our national leaders.
Yes. Isn't it refreshing that we finally have an administration that's planning secret military strikes out in the open? When Barack Obama gave the go-ahead to kill Osama bin Laden, why wasn't that meeting live-streamed? The media only cares about this because it distracts from Trump's wins. The other day, I bought a dozen eggs for just $12. In the end, this unclassified, top-secret, highly sensitive, fully transparent chat was just a big nothing. It's like my dear, dear friend Mike Waltz just texted me. First strike imminent. Oh, God.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta
call
my friends in Quebec.
Oh, yeah.
That's Desi Lydic from The Daily Show.
It's good stuff.
That's
it really
signal
is.
Chat.
By the way, the price of eggs has gone down dramatically.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, finally.
Yes. Huh? Actually, they're about $6.50 now for a dozen and a half.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a pretty good price.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
We'll go with that for a while.
I'm going to rush out and get some after the show.
Okay. Why don't
just
you
to
do
make
that?
Sure. And
okay.
Now they'll be short again.
So. Oh, boy. Okay. Coming up, we're going to talk to Patrick McBride. He is the author of a great book called The Luckiest Boy in the World, about his time starting out as a bat boy for the Milwaukee Brewers. And, oh, boy, wait till you hear the rest of the story. It's all coming up on The Maggie Dawn Show. John Peterson, Gordy Young filling in on the Civic Media Radio Network. On the Civic Media Radio Network, in for Maggie Dawn on this Friday afternoon. We got the phone lines open at 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. And we are attempting to make our connection here. Cal, do we have Pat McBride with us? Good afternoon, Pat. Can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Oh, great.
Oh, great.
Good deal. We got you here. It's John and Gordy. And we're talking with Patrick McBride. He is, he's got a book called The Luckiest Boy in the World. We talked to him a while back. In fact, it was several months ago.
Yeah.
And he's got a great story to tell here, Pat, when he was just a young guy. If you get this book, on the back, it's got a big list of all the people that Patrick has encountered. And it all started out after he met John F. Kennedy when he was 6 years old. Patrick, good afternoon. It's good to have you with John and Gordy here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Mm-hmm. How are you doing today?
Great, gentlemen. How are you doing? Well, actually, doing I'm a little worried about the future, but the past has been fun.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, you started out at a very young age. First of all, this meeting with John F. Kennedy when you were 6 years old, and maybe you can tell us a little bit about that. But really, your story really gets interesting when you became a bat boy for the Milwaukee Brewers. Give us a little bit about why you wrote this book, The Luckiest Boy in the World, and a little bit of your story.
And you're from Milwaukee, Wauwatosa, is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, yeah. I just had lunch with my brother, Dennis, who's the co-author. He's the mayor of Wauwatosa currently.
Oh, wow. And, okay.
Yeah, he's in his second term. Mm-hmm. He's just finished a book about being the mayor, and that'll come out soon. But I wrote the book. It's actually a bit of an ironic title because we grew up in a big Irish Catholic family, and my parents were both newspaper reporters. My mom was a political reporter for the Milwaukee Sentinel, mm-hmm. and the morning paper, and my dad was a writer for the Milwaukee Journal, and I had to keep that hush-hush or I never would have gotten a job in the locker rooms. They wouldn't wanted a reporter's kid.
Right.
In the locker rooms. I could have gotten a lot of scoops, let me tell you that.
Yeah.
But my mother covered the White House, so that's how I got to meet JFK. She ran his campaign before getting a job as a reporter. And she ran his campaign in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Big primary. If he hadn't won that primary, he would have dropped out, he said.
So, and you were just 6 years old when you met him. What do you remember about that brief meeting?
I remember a lot about it. He and Jackie were there, and he was very late. So my twin brother took off for kindergarten because he didn't want to get in trouble with the teacher. But I said, I'm staying. I was used to being in trouble with the teacher, so it was easy. So I got in line to meet him, and I was just a little guy, and I was in afternoon kindergarten, and I shook his hand, and he dropped his pen, and I picked it up and gave it to him, and he said, you can have it. I don't know where that pen is.
And then
I circled back around. I got in line again. I shook his hand and Jackie's again, and then I circled back around. The third time he said, you know, I think I've met you before. That's when I decided I probably should go to class. Mm-hmm. And when I got to class, my brother was really happy because he thought I was going to get in trouble. And the teacher said, Pat, tell us about meeting JFK.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great.
The star of the class.
He was a terrific guy. He was extremely friendly, charismatic. Mm-hmm. Even though he's like 2 hours late, he acted like nothing was happening. Jackie was very sweet and kind. Great people.
Well, he had two young kids too, so.
Yeah. Sure. So let's fast forward to how you became a Milwaukee Brewers bat boy. How did that all happen?
Well, you know, it's very apropos that it's, you know, the close to opening day coming up for the Brewers, which is always a really exciting time. Mm-hmm. I won an essay contest in the Milwaukee Sentinel. You know, I was really struggling in school at the time, and I was looking for something in my life. And I opened the paper, and there was an ad to be the first bat boy for the Milwaukee Brewers. This is 1969, actually. And there was a 25-word essay, and it was, I would like to be a bat boy because, you know, I wrote, I would like to be a bat boy because I would like to be doing a small part toward bringing baseball back to Milwaukee. I would hope the spirit I would show would be contagious. And the judge of the contest was Eddie Matthews, the famous Milwaukee Brave.
Yeah, sure.
And he picked my essay.
Wow.
That's great.
That is great.
So now,
you know, the Brewers, the Braves had left. And the Brewers came back, and and Matthew was working with the team at that point, or
You know, the Bud Selig was still close to a lot of the guys, you know, and he was really working hard to get baseball back, and he'd almost bought the White Sox. So the White Sox had games in Milwaukee in '68 and '69. We used to ride our bikes down there and run around the stadium, and so I actually got to work as a bat boy for those White Sox games at 69, and I met a lot of the visiting teams. And so because Selig was working on the inside with the with Major League Baseball, he got to know Matthews very well when the Braves were in town. And so he must have been in touch with them, because I got this crazy letter that said, Eddie Matthews picked your essay out, and you're going to be, come on down to the stadium and we'll orient you. You know, I got to put on a uniform for the first time. And the first game that I worked was an exhibition game, and it was against the Cubs. It was in 69. The first player that I met was the great Ernie Banks.
Oh, man. Number 14.
Yeah. I still get chills thinking about it, because he came down. I could hear his spikes and stuck his head around the corner. And he said, it's a great day, son. Let's play two. And then he said, you want to have a catch? And after I, you know, stopped from almost fainting, we went out there and I played catch with Ernie Banks.
And he threw you a bottle of Coke, right? Those are the ads. I recall
it's a different thing altogether. Well,
they didn't get paid very much, so they had to do something for an income then.
So now your book, The Luckiest Boy in the World, you list on the back here a number of these stars that you met over the years: Joe DiMaggio, Ted Williams, Henry Aaron, Stan Musial, Reggie Jackson, Pete Rose. I mean, the list goes on and on. But I want to talk a little bit about, this is the first Brewers season without Bob Uecker in a long time, long time broadcaster. You got to know Uke quite well.
Yeah,
isn't that correct?
That's right. You know, I was the second season, I was with the Brewers. I was in the hospital getting my tonsils taken out. And I was listening to the game on the radio, and Euchre said, well, we'd like to give a big shout out to our bat boy, Pat McBride, who's in St. Mary's Hospital, having his tonsils out, and we hope he's getting better. So, I don't know if he can take those tonsils home with him. You know, he's always doing some kind of joke.
Yeah.
When I got back to the stadium and he saw me, he said, he's always wandering around. He's up in the dining room. He said, hey, I heard you like to fish. How about coming out in my boat? We'll catch some salmon. Cook it up for your family. So he invited me out fishing. It's my first real encounter. You know, I'd been on a road trip, and you're around the guy. Everybody's around the guy. You know, what people heard on the radio, what people saw on TV, Harry Doyle and Major League, that is Euchre 24/7.
Oh, that's great.
You see Yelich in the crazy plaid suit and the 70s get up and the crate. I'm telling you, Euchre was always like that. I mean, I never, ever, nobody ever, ever saw that guy down.
Yeah.
I knew him in a bar on the south side, and he'd say, hey, let's have a beer, and then he'd make you pay for it, or he'd have beer for the whole place. Yeah. That's Euchre. All the time. And he took me out fishing. I caught a big coho. And he had me take it home. I mean, the guy was not only a superb human being, but he was the funniest person you ever met in your life, always.
Was there a specific bar that you guys hung out at on the south side of Milwaukee?
Yeah, I can't remember the name of Harvey Keene's bar. Mm-hmm. Was it the Vista Hotel or something like that? But Harvey Keene owned a hotel with his wife. Talk about a sweetheart of a human being, Harvey Keene. That's why that 82 team that started out so rough came together, because Harvey Keene was just a wonderful person. And the players used to go to there after a lot of games and have beers at Harvey Keene's place. Or Saz's.
Patrick, have you seen the new movie, Just a Bit Outside?
Yes, I have. It's spectacular. I went there with a heavy dose of skepticism and left in tears. I mean, when Robin Yount cried, that was it. I was done. Yeah. Robin Yount doesn't cry, let me tell you that.
Right.
I wonder if that it's at a Wisconsin Film Festival here in Madison. I'm not quite sure.
Actually, it is. Yeah. Yes, it is. Yeah. Talking with Patrick McBride, the author of the book, The Luckiest Boy in the World. Now, this was really a life-changing experience for you as a young man, Patrick. You became the bat boy. And then, as I recall your story, you had some advice, some career advice along the way. And first of all, you also became a ball boy for the Milwaukee Bucks along the way, and then did some work for the Green Bay Packers. So it really opened up a lot of doors for you as a young man, and then leading to an eventual career path, right?
Yes. Well, let me put this in a lot larger context, and that's what the book really is about. It. There's a lot of people that, especially in the era that I grew up in, you know, the greatest generation struggled a lot, you know, with alcoholism and, you know, tough times for that crew. They grew up in the Depression and went through World War II, and it took me a long time to figure it out, really. But both my parents had alcoholism and fought all the time. And it was tough. It was really tough growing up. They fought every night. And and I was a kid really struggling, you know, in the middle of seven kids, and really, I don't know. It's a long story, but that's what's in the book. And so I was looking for a way. And when I got these jobs, I expected, hey, you know, I'm going to meet all these celebrities. I mean, I met presidents, mayors, governors, Howard Cosell, all the big media stars. I mean, film stars would walk into the locker room. Everybody wanted to meet Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and wanted to meet Oscar Robertson and wanted to meet Pistol Pete Maravich and Joe Namath. And I got all their autographs, but what really happened from my experience was the mentoring that I received from the adults that were in these organizations, because this is the Midwest. So it's not New York City and it's not LA. These are good, solid people. So people like Wayne Embry and the trainers that I work with, they took a 15-year-old kid and they saw a spark and some intelligence that I didn't know that I had. I thought I was a dumb kid. And they said, you are going to medical school. And I said, I am what? I thought I was going to be a paper boy or a, you know, I wanted to be an athletic trainer, and it completely changed my life. And they made sure that I had the opportunities, you know, they'd have me meet the doctors, and they also said, you're going to get a 3.6 grade point average or you're not working here anymore. And that's what I did.
Amazing.
Well, I'm kind of surprised you weren't a paper boy for both the Sentinel in the morning and the Journal in the afternoon. You could have made a lot of money, man.
You know, you got paid well as paper boy. I'll tell you this, though.
Yeah.
And I thought about this the other day. You know, as a paper boy, everybody that I talked to that is a paper boy, you had to keep track of how many papers, how many customers, how much money. And because of that, I became the equipment manager of the Milwaukee Bucks, the NBA champions, at age 17. And I was able to keep track of a $150,000 budget because I was a paper boy.
That's amazing. You know, I had a bad neighborhood. They didn't pay me. So.
Patrick, can you stay with us through the break here? We got a few more questions for you. I'd like to talk a little bit more about your book, The Luckiest Boy in the World.
Love you.
Very good. That's Patrick McBride. We will continue on the Civic Media Radio Network. John Peterson, Gordy Youngin on the Maggie Dawn Show. Stay with us.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Fantastic stuff. You were talking we're talking to Pat McBride here and about his book, The Luckiest Boy in the World. And we talked previous, and you know, there's something about Wisconsin nice, you know, that you were talking about. You know, this is the Midwest and people are really good people. And I mentioned to you the last time when we talked that I knew Merle Harmon. He was my first interview for radio broadcast school at the Institute of Broadcast Arts on Appleton Avenue or Fond du Lac Avenue. I can't remember. There are two angled streets that I've never been able to tell apart. But he was such a nice guy. He was so accommodating for me, nervous as heck, talking to Merle Harmon. You know, he even had stores out in the area, so, you know.
He was so kind, you know, when we were young kids on these road trips and things like that, he'd take us out to dinner. I mean, you know, like a guy like Eddie Doucette was the same way, you know.
Yes.
When you write forward for the book, he did not hesitate. I mean, just, you don't find that in big, big media markets, you know. It's the two of you just being so terrific as you do and the work you do. I'll tell you, nothing's more important right now than media.
Yeah.
And democracy and independent media. God bless you.
Yep. Pro Democracy Network here. So,
Pat, let's talk a little bit about your time with the Milwaukee Bucks as a equipment guy behind the scenes. And you met and got to know Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. Kareem was an inspiration. You know, he's, you know, I was 15 when he came, and, you know, he was obviously just graduated from UCLA, and he was inspiration because he was so brilliant, very quiet. But he was had the world's largest jazz record collection, Persian rug collection. He's deep into history. He ended up, I think he's written over 30 books. I'm still in touch with him, and he had a jazz record show in Milwaukee on WUWM, I think. And sure. With a guy named Ron, somebody you might remember.
Ron Kuzner.
Yeah, Ron Kuzner. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was a fabulous show. It was called.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it was great just to be around him, to just see what he did. He was always playing chess with Lucius Allen in locker room. So different. A baseball locker room was a bunch of pranks and a bunch of crazy guys running around. And a basketball locker room, they're all college graduates at the time. They all had to finish college. And they would talk about news and deep stories and play chess and play music. It was fun. Very different environment.
Now, but somewhere along the line.
Not the same. Football, yeah. With grunt and mud and slam and, you know, muscle posing. And, no.
Yeah. We just have a couple of more minutes left, but talk a little bit about getting into your career years here and how you made this transition into medical school and then eventually getting into cardiology, right?
Yeah.
I remember correctly.
Well, you know, the first trainer of the Milwaukee Bucks, Arnie Garber, was very into physiology, and he was very into the medical side of athletic training. And so I was very inspired by him, and I thought I might do that. And he was the one that insisted that I not spend my life in a locker room, going to medical school, and really pushed me. And so I was really inspired by that. And he had very advanced training methods he's way ahead of time. And I learned about interval training, things that people do now, and different treatment modalities. It got me very inspired. So I ended up in my career, I made it to medical school, and I ended up in my career working at the University of Wisconsin for 40 years. And I started health promotion programs and weight loss programs and cholesterol treatment and a lot of most heart disease prevention programs. And it was mostly being inspired by watching how athletes, you know, when we had training programs at Carroll College in Waukesha, and they would run 220s, 440s, these intervals, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar would beat everybody by 20 to 30 yards. Because he was such a gifted athlete. Of course, he had very long legs.
Right.
He was so fast. And I would watch this, and I would watch he and Lucius Allen from UCLA just beat everybody. And it was the way they trained. And it was the way they were built. And it was the way they were trained by John Wooden. Mm-hmm. Very inspiring. If you read John Wooden, it's not just about athletics. It's about approach that you take to your life and your work.
And you're still involved, even though you're retired or semi-retired, you still do some mentoring. Is that right, Pat?
Yes, I mentor young professors, primarily young female professors, to try to help them, you know, make it through this academic world and on their grants. And you know, these grants are at great risk right now due to Washington problems, but I'm also mentoring young pre-meds because I want them to have the same opportunities, and pre-nursing students, I want them to have the same opportunities that this trainer gave me, and to get a hand up. And because I think healthcare is not only so important, but it's also it's the best career I could possibly think of.
Yeah. Are you all for a universal healthcare, Pat?
Absolutely am. I don't feel like these salaries need to be what they need to be or whatever, but I feel like healthcare is really a right. We should all have the same opportunity for.
You believe that maybe doctors' colleges should be paid for?
Yes. You know, if students now are graduating with over $400,000 or $500,000 in debt on average. Yeah. And if we took care of that, then we wouldn't have this great, crazy capitalistic, you know, push. That's why we're not primary care physicians.
I agree.
Well, Pat McBride, thanks for being with us. The book, again, is The Luckiest Boy in the World. If people want to find that, where can they do that? What's the best way to...
Look at your local bookstores, especially in the Madison area, it's available on Amazon.
Very good.
Thank you all so much.
Pat McBride, thanks for being with us.
It's great talking to you again.
And that's going to do it for John and Gordy filling in for Maggie Dawn all this week. Thanks to our producer, Cal.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a good time. Maggie will be back on Monday. Have a great...
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.